Happy Friday, Plant City. I'm Justin Klein, she's Brianne Williams, and we'd like to welcome you back to the 6 Feet Apartcast. The Plant City Observer is bringing you the latest on all things COVID-19 around our area week after week. And we're going to start with the news from this week's EPG meetings. Well, you can read about Monday's meeting in yesterday's paper if you want. And now, in this space, we're going to cover yesterday's. So, Bri, take it away.
All right. So, I am going to start with a quick update on COVID-19 cases. So, Florida as a whole added more than 10,000 cases on Thursday. You heard that correctly. I did not misspeak. 10,000 cases. So that is before we even enter this July 4th weekend where people will undoubtedly run off and be stupid and not social distance. Keep in mind that we have to wait for anyone who is exposed to then get sick or get tested or both, and then those have to go off and then they come back. So we really probably won't be seeing the effect of July 4th for quite some time. Thursday was also the day that Vice President Mike Pence visited Tampa to discuss with Ron DeSantis, our governor, how the state has handled this pandemic. We have a 7-day average now of approximately 42 deaths a day. Hospitalizations are on the rise. The latest number showed an increase of 329 people. So let's talk about our backyard. In Tampa Bay on the same day, so that's Thursday's data, we added 1,944 cases and 15 deaths. The latest total data was showing that Hillsborough has 12,376 cases and 148 deaths. In comparison, Polk County has 4,327 cases and 103 deaths. So those people that commute or travel for shopping or activities, or those people who say they're going to go to Polk County because they don't have to wear a mask, they should keep that in mind. The mask mandate has been in effect for a little over a week now, and as I'm sure you're acutely aware of by now, people feel very passionately both for and against it. The EPG votes on the order every Monday to determine if they keep it or not. They've discussed maybe combining that with the renewal of the emergency order, which they vote on Thursday, but they haven't shifted the date yet, so as of now, it's still on Mondays. Because they talk about it on Monday and they vote on it on Monday, there really wasn't a lot of discussion about the mask mandate on Thursday. But Monday was one of the longest meetings the EPG has ever had. Buckle in if you go back and watch it. That's all I'm really going to say on that. It was a long afternoon. And when the mandate was first announced, the group decided to place the responsibility of enforcing the wearing of masks inside businesses on the business operator, not on the individual. And that has led to many people calling the members and saying it wasn't their job to make sure that the customers comply. We talked about that a little bit last week, so I'm not going to dive too heavily into that. But because of all those comments, the group has begun discussing how to alter that without getting rid of the enforcement aspect altogether, because then it's just a really strong recommendation and doesn't hold any weight to it, essentially. So the group has asked their county attorney to see if there was an amendment that they could get behind, perhaps as an alteration that would say if a business was putting up signs and asking customers to wear the mask and doing everything they were supposed to do, but a customer refused to comply, then the business would be able to call law enforcement and that individual that was, you know, resisting and not the business would be the one to face the repercussions. Nothing was voted on. That discussion literally just began, and so whether or not that's the route the group wishes to go hasn't been determined yet. I fully expect to see that conversation come up again this Monday, so tune in if that's something that interests you. However, there were some changes that were approved, and I'm going to quickly run through those. Nonprofits that supply goods and services in an inside area are no longer exempt to the mandate, and they have to have their customers comply and wear a mask. Also now, children under the age of 8 don't have to wear a mask anymore if their parents don't want them to. If your child is probably closer to the 8 years old, though, and they can wear a mask, the health professionals are saying it won't hurt them to do so. Any child under the age of 18 does not have to wear a mask or you know any face covering as long as they are participating in activities such as organized youth sports, summer camps, and child care programs. What happens come this fall in local schools is going to be up to the school board, and that is a conversation that is still ongoing as more and more data continues to rise. What a lot of people are expecting will happen is the school board will make a decision. The data will continue to change. They're going to have to change that decision. The data will continue to change. They'll have to change that decision. So really, I would just buckle in and wait until right before school comes out, you know, and then decide what, you know, the latest rules are going to be. So the EPG meets twice a week. The meeting that is next is on Monday at 1:30 p.m. You can watch on the county's YouTube and Facebook page. The group will be discussing the mask mandate again. And if you want, you can participate in their public comment section, which they allot 20 minutes for. Each person gets, I think, 2 minutes. So head to the county's website and get all the information on how you can sign up if that's something you are interested in.
Okay, we're going to move on now to the talk of the town. So that mask ordinance made a lot of people angry because unless you're in Tampa, it puts all the responsibility on the businesses to enforce it, which means it puts all the penalties on the businesses when someone doesn't want to comply and none of the penalties on the people who do not want to comply because of their pride or whatever. Hopefully they have legit reasons, but anyway, the EPG made plans to discuss, and I quote, good faith efforts to tweak the mandate, whatever that means, and either way, we wanted to get your thoughts on how the EPG should tackle this thing, and you all delivered. Some of you even gave super long answers with step-by-step solutions, too, which was extra awesome. We pulled some of your Facebook comments for the show today, but before we get started, just one more thing I gotta add. Last week, for Talk of the Town, a lot of you who were unhappy about the mask mandate said you were gonna take your business to Lakeland for the time being. Lakeland has since issued its own mandatory face mask ordinance, which went into effect yesterday. So keep that in mind before you go out. I lived in Winter Haven for a while. It's pretty nice there. But hey, whatever you want to do. Anyway, let's get back on track. We are going to start with Jennifer Behringer, who said, My biggest wish for the mask mandate in Hillsborough County is for businesses and people to read the actual mandate and not just listen to the Cliff Notes version. It specifically states that wearing a mask is not mandatory if you are maintaining 6 feet social distancing. Give people the whole story and not just what you want them to believe. So this comment got a few replies from people who voiced their displeasure with the fact that our headlines don't give you the full story. I'm here to tell you that that's how it is for every news outlet, every magazine, every blog, you name it. We also just want to let our online readers know that you can click on a headline to see the full story behind it. And in this particular case, you can see that the mandate exceptions were specifically listed in the 8th paragraph of last week's story about the EPG meeting in which that mandate was passed. Jennifer's right, y'all. The best way to get the most out of any article or story anywhere you look is to read what all comes after the headline. All right, we're moving on. Caitlin Sherritt said, well, the EPG is overstepping their bounds by creating and attempting to enforce a mask mandate. So I guess I would like to see them disbanded completely and for it to be left up to the individual businesses, the city, the county, and the state to make these decisions. That being said, masks are only helpful if you are in a situation with poor ventilation where you can't distance yourself properly from others, so maybe only require it in those settings. Aaron Park Watson said, during a public health crisis, it is the EPG's duty and responsibility to represent the people of Hillsborough County. Having said that, science-driven data has proven that masks worn by all is known to reduce, not eliminate, the risk of community spread, especially when worn indoors where there is recirculated air. It is the responsibility of the owners to do their due diligence and post signage at their establishment to make the public aware of the policy. It is the individual's due diligence to follow the establishment's rules. It is everyone's responsibility to have compassion for their fellow business owners, employees, patrons, friends, and family. And having compassion means stepping outside of yourself to help others, whether that means opening a door, helping someone across the street, or wearing a mask for a couple of moments while shopping. This virus will not go away until everyone starts helping one another. Brett Wally said, people that want to wear them will wear them. Those that don't will not. Hillsborough County is already being sued over this. Leave people alone and let them decide what is best for themselves. Brielle Madalena said, shift responsibility to the patrons. It's absolutely ridiculous to put it on a business owner. Would they prefer the business owner tackle non-mask wearers to the ground when they enter? Finding the business owner is just a sure way to make the county some money. Putting the responsibility on the patrons is a sure way to make sure patrons wear a mask. I think these business owners have been beat up enough during the pandemic. Lauren Ferguson Bridges said, toss it. Penalties will not hold up in court. And last but not least, this one's pretty long, so forgive me if I get tongue-tied, but Ashley Gear Hedrick said, come up with a tiered system for penalties. First offense, second offense, and so on for both businesses and patrons. If a patron becomes belligerent about being asked to wear a face mask or takes criminal action, such as spitting in someone else's face, then the business has a right to ban that person from the premises and should be reported for belligerent behavior just like any other day. We simply cannot continue to operate freely without taking common sense measures to protect each other, or we can close again, which we all know is devastating. There should be penalties for both businesses and patrons for refusing to comply. If there are one or two people walking around without a mask, even when the business has signs up notifying customers to wear a mask and they have at least asked the patron to put on their mask, then they're operating in good faith. If the customer refuses, the penalty should now fall on the customer. But it's a two-way street. Both businesses and patrons bear the societal responsibility of wearing / enforcing masks. Business does not want that burden, then they have no right making money off of the community they refuse to protect or at least not contribute further to the problem. Honestly, we can look at mask wearing the same as smoking. You cannot light up in a store anymore. The business has a right to kick you out for doing so. Sure, you have a right to smoke, just not indoors, because then you're harming others and infringing on their right to not be harmed by you. The business does not get penalized for the patron's decision to break the rules, in this case, law. The patron is responsible for it and should be penalized as such if, however, the business is not putting in a good faith effort of putting up signs and asking patrons to comply and thereby turning a blind eye that ultimately puts their workers at health risk in addition to other patrons, then they should absolutely be penalized just like any other health code violation with a tiered system. First offense, stern warning on record. Second offense, fine. Third offense, higher fine. Fourth offense, mandatory shutdown until rules can be followed. Deep breath. Anyway, let's move on. So this is the introvert's guide to self-isolation, which we hope you don't have to do, but well, if you do get sick, we'll help you. So I've noticed lately that a lot of musicians and bands that I follow and some others that are kind of in the same orbit, they've been announcing rescheduled concert dates for next year, whether it's just solo tours, group tours, or even big festivals like Ridefest in Chicago. That's got me pretty stoked because I was supposed to go see Circa Survive back in March around the exact same time the COVID shutdown started, and then Circa had to postpone the tour. That was a bummer, but I understood. I didn't want to be packed like sardines in a concert hall when there was COVID going around and nobody knew heads from tails on this thing. Well, now I get a notification that they're planning to be back in Florida in February, and I couldn't be happier or at the very least more optimistic. And right now you might be able to catch local artists performing every so often at some smaller venues, not like going to Janus or House of Blues or anything like that. I hope you'll support the local artists if you feel safe wherever they're playing at. For example, Casey Stidham, he put on a pretty good show at Roots on Father's Day. I went there, I got my distance between other patrons, and I enjoyed my time. It was great. But I also know it's not going to be the same while we all have to be at least 6 feet apart from each other, and we're not going to get the same experience as we would under normal times. It's just, it is what it is. So on that note, the first concerts back after COVID treatment and or vaccine options are in effect and working, they're going to be incredible. So now's a pretty good time to check up on some bands that you've always wanted to see live, or somebody you were going to see live and missed out on because of this whole thing. See if they've announced any shows wherever you'd like to go watch concerts, go get you some tickets. Even if February comes, using my Circa show as an example, even if February comes and bands have to push their dates back even further because things aren't quite where they need to be, you've got tickets in hand at the very least. They'll either refund you or reschedule for you without any extra money out of pocket. And personally, I feel much better about the odds of live music coming back strong next year than coming back anytime this year. Unless, of course, you're going to some of those pop country concerts in Tennessee and Idaho and stuff. And if that's your scene, but I don't really want to catch COVID or risk it just so I can go see Chase Rice. Just my opinion. What about you, Bree?
So Justin and I both love video games, which I'm fairly certain anyone who listens religiously to these podcasts has figured out by now. These past few weeks have been crazy news-wise, if you have paid attention at all to local news, national news. It's been a hot mess. And Justin and I have both put in serious amount of hours. And usually when that happens, my questionable self, let's just say that, responds in one of two ways. I sleep like the dead every chance I get, or I do not sleep at all. And I live off of Americanos. So I've been leaning toward the coffee fix recently, and that has led to hours of free time, quote unquote, during the night and early morning when normal people are asleep. So I've dived into the Steven Universe TV show and Taste the Nation on Hulu, but what I've really been pouring my time into is Animal Crossing. And I know, Justin, you mentioned it briefly during your video game rec list a while back, but you yourself don't play. I'm still holding out hope you'll get a Switch and join us, but today is apparently not yet that day. So for those of you who've been living under a rock, Animal Crossing, actually it's Animal Crossing New Horizons, this is the next one, is a game on the Nintendo Switch. It is a game that is so popular, when quarantine started, you could not buy a Nintendo Switch anywhere in the world. They sell out the second that they were put back online. I had to wait a very, very long time to get mine, and when it did come, the only game that I put on it was Animal Crossing. Eventually, I'm sure I'll branch out and get some Pokemon and some Zelda, but for now, I'm really pouring everything into this. So, you play as a human character. You get to customize the character to look however you would prefer for it to. Mine has teal hair. I'm very excited about it. And this character starts a new life on a deserted island with a handful of quirky animal neighbors. And at first, you're on this island, and you're living in a tent with a cot. And you're having to learn how to make tools like fishing rods, shovels, axes, and you start to clean up the island, you develop it, you make it a hot destination for campers and even other residents. Happy, jaunty little music plays the entire time. Everyone you interact with is adorable. Some personalities are better than others, I'll be completely honest, but there isn't a bad character. It's basically a simple and pleasant form of escapism. And several of my friends play. If you're a casual player, you log on, you dig up some fossils, you catch some fish, you sell what you don't want to keep, and you slowly pay off your house. Well, I left the realm of casual a while ago, and I've learned some tips and tricks for you if you want to get ahead in the game and really make your island into an oasis. First off, you need to decide out the gate if you are a time jumper or not. Everything on your island operates in real time, so depending on the time of day, different fish and insects can be found. If you upgrade your house, the construction takes place while you sleep, so you can't see it until the next morning. I am impatient, so I time jump, but I would like to say that I do it within reason, of course. I think as of now, I'm like a week and a half ahead in time. In comparison, one of my friends in Tampa is currently in October, so I'm not too shabby. And you can time jump by altering the date and time on your Switch console. That is the beginner's trick. Then you have to decide how deep into this you want to go. I created a Reddit. I never thought I would say that. I have never been a fan of Reddit. I've never understood Reddit. I never wanted anything to do with Reddit, but I now have a Reddit, just so I could join a thread where people post about buying and selling turnips. Turnips are available once a week on your island. You have to buy them from this little lady who sells them. She just shows up and sells turnips. And then your shopkeeper on your island buys them back every other day of the week at a different price. So sometimes they're offering less than what you paid, sometimes more. And if you buy a bunch, then you go onto this Reddit thread and you find people who are posting what their island's current buy and sell prices are. And the currency is a thing called bells. It's not dollars, it's bells. So if you hear me say that, that's what it is. You'll go on this thread, you either comment or DM them, and they will put you in a queue for visiting their island. And the thread I'm on is all basic friendly terms, so there's no strings attached, so you can just show up and sell them and leave, and you don't have to do anything. But these people have to take time out of their day to fly you in and off their island. They have to be logged on and waiting for you. So I go ahead and I sell all of my turnips, and then say I make a million bells off of them. I end up giving whoever is the host of the island, you know, a bag of bells as a thank you. It's not required, but it is a nice thing to do. Then I have money to upgrade my house, buy decorations, buy new outfits, etc. So another tip is there are multiple websites, including a few actual apps that act as in-game exchange shops. So for example, a friend of mine in Brandon is making his island Harry Potter themed. He has each room of his house themed for a different aspect of the books. And if I want to buy him, say, a potion set or a wizard's hat or dramatic floor lighting, I can go on these websites and look for them. You pay for it either with an exchange or with your in-game money, so the bells. So none of this is costing you a dime of real-world cash. I know all the parents of the Fortnite players are probably shocked to hear that that's even possible. But it's all about using your resources to get the best island you can. I've also made friends through these sites and have had people custom make me stuff, and I've customized things for them as well. So now whenever I log on, rather than just having, you know, my 5 or 6 friends that I know in person that I play with, I have 15, and that's just within a few weeks. I'm sure in a while I'll have even more than that. So I have lots of options of visiting people and going on adventures. And some of these sites even specifically have pages where you post pictures of your island and then invite people over so they can come and run around and check it out. And Animal Crossing, they have a thing where, say I have a hammock out. If someone comes to my island and they touch the hammock, so they have to pick it up, put it in their pocket, and then put it back down. Now that hammock is in their registry and they can buy it whenever they want. So there are all kinds of opportunities for parties specifically for touching things. It's really weird. I love every second of it, and it has made it so much more fun. So I highly recommend if you are an adult. For children, that's probably a lot more work than they need to be involved with, and I don't super condone kids on Reddit and other sites at all. But if you are an adult and you're playing and you want a hyper customized experience, do the research, put the time in, plug into these communities. It is going to make the game so much more fun than it was originally.
Meanwhile, I've just been playing a lot of Call of Duty Warzone lately, and I'm really salty all the time because of it. I never want to see a riot shield again in my life. Anyway, last things last, we're going to look for the helpers. All you listeners out there, if you want to do us a solid and keep us in the loop with positive news and uplifting stories for us to talk about in this little part of our show, well, it'd be a lot cooler if you did. Might even make it into the paper and online. And we're going to end the show on a high note. Actually, you go first, Bree. Well, I mean, you always go first. So I don't know why I said actually, but you go first. What made your heart sing this week?
Exactly 1 week ago today, 3 local Girl Scouts went to the Plant City Commons Community Garden and unveiled a lending library book box. The girls, and I apologize if I get your names wrong, Hannah, Aslan, and Eva, installed the library right then and there. It was part of their project to achieve a Silver Award, which is basically the highest Girl Scout award a cadet can earn. So for this project alone, by the time all was said and done, each of the girls had invested 50 hours or more on the project. And it really was a group effort. 84 Lumber supported this project because of their dedication towards the community, and the Girl Scouts chose the Plant City Commons Community Garden, or the PCCCG, for a variety of reasons, one of which is the fact that that place really does symbolize so much of what makes Plant City a great place to live. I've talked about the garden several times on this podcast, so if you've been listening, you're more than aware of all the things they offer, but if not, I highly recommend you follow their Facebook page or even just drive out one day and see it for yourself. It's right across from HCC on Park Road, and it truly is a perfect place to stretch your legs, take in some gems found in nature. So the Girl Scouts had a special ceremony in their honor at the garden on June 26th, and the way the library works is simple. It's an honor system. You walk up, and if you see a book you like, you take it. If you have a book at home, or say the book you've just taken, if you read it and are done with it and you don't want to keep it, bring a book back. That way others can, you know, enjoy what you left there. And it becomes a community exchange of people giving and sharing the stories that impacted their lives. And there are several other lending libraries around town that are not related to this. I highly recommend you go check those out as well. You can just get in your car and drive around and start to see them. But there's a few in front of some schools. There's a bunch downtown. And while any book can be donated, the Scouts did say that gardening books especially are recommended for their location, which is at the garden. So why not continue to read this summer? It's a good hobby.
Yeah, the lending libraries are pretty cool. I remember actually it was a few years ago that there was another big movement too. We got down on that. So we had a lending library in front of our old office on Alexander Street for a little while. That was back when Amber Jurgensen was out here. That was pretty cool. It was covered in newspapers and stuff like that, like a paper mache thing almost. And we moved since that. Well, yeah, if you didn't already know, we moved. We're back downtown now. And I have no idea what happened to our lending library. Have you seen it?
I think it's still there.
Maybe it'll, I don't know. Maybe it'll turn up, or maybe it's still there and they just didn't want to move it, whatever. I don't know. But if it's still there, I think of it like as a little monument to our time in that little office in the corner of Alexander and Mendoza. Just, you know, Observer was here, that sort of thing. Gone but never forgotten. Anyway, whatever, that's pretty cool. My thing is, I got to chat with Marshall Middle Magnet School's new principal, Dennis Mayo, last week, and we wrote a little story about him in this week's paper. Dennis strikes me as a very passionate guy with a clear vision for Marshall's future with an IB program. If you didn't already know, they're going pretty hard. In a few years, they should be able to transition over to an IB school. Dennis is pretty enthusiastic, not only about being there at Marshall, but also for being back in the Plant City area full time. This is where he went to school from a little bit of time in elementary school, middle school, high school. He came back to Turkey Creek Middle School later on as a principal for a while. Then he went to work for the school district. Now he's back. So he knows the area. He's very passionate about it. Yeah, I don't have any kids of my own. Neither does Bree. At least not that any of us knows about, but I think we're okay there. But I'm still pretty excited that we're only a few years off from Plant City having three IB programs in town so the kids can start at Lincoln, they can go to Marshall, and then they can end at Strawberry Crest. They can stay local the whole time. They don't have to travel to go to an IB school for middle school. That'll be pretty awesome. So I'm hoping that Dennis and the Marshall staff are going to be able to channel all this positive new energy and give the kids the best experience possible during and after this phase of transition into their IB program. And on that note, we're going to wrap things up. We'd like to thank everybody again for tuning in this week and ask you to stay tuned for next Friday's podcast. And as always, we're going to ask you to stay safe too, Plant City, because we like you.